Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery. Code Wondery.
When it comes to hiring, don't go searching for the one. Just meet your match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 183. Hey, you guys. The Nerdist channel is launching April 2nd, and please don't get mad at me for talking a lot about it because we are working very hard to make sure that it succeeds to bring you the kind of nerdtastic programming that I assume that you will want to see. So go to youtube.com/nerdist. You can see our channel announcement lineup. And there will be a show in there for you. Tech, pop culture, gaming, comic books, movies, whatever. We're going to find something for you. So please go there, click subscribe, and let us launch the video wing of Nerdist Industries. I'd like to thank Hover.com for being a sponsor on this episode of the Nerdist Podcast. Hover is domain name registration that is simple. Right now, they offer premium domain search. So let's say someone already owns a domain because it's probably a generic name that they squatted on a long time ago, something like sandwich or drycleaning.com. By the way, if you wanted to start sandwichdrycleaning.com, the premium sandwich cleaning service, you'd be a trillionaire. But in any case, if you're willing to pay a little bit more, then you can search those domains, and then you can sort of they'll broker the deal between you and that person. They're going to be a little more expensive because they're generic names, but Hover can still make that happen if you've got the coin, as Skyrim would say. So if you have any clunker domains registered with Hover, you can now trade them in. So let's say you registered something because you got really drunk and you didn't, and you're like, why did I register giantsquidnipples.com? Hover will take it back. They'll credit everything you've spent on your old clunker with Hover, of course, the original registration fee and any renewal fees. So just an amazing company to work with. Go to Hover.com right now. Use the offer code Nerdist and get 10% off your domain. That does not apply to premium domains, but the fancy subdomain Nerdist.Hover.com is the place to go and use the offer code Nerdist. Now this episode, we didn't have a hostful for a few weeks just because of crazy work schedules. I mean, we all work very full time, so it is amazing to me that we're still able to record anything. And we record quite a few guested podcasts. I think we did like 5 guested podcasts last week. So we're doing our best here, people. We enjoy the hostfuls as well, and we're shocked and amazed that people give a crap about them. So thank you for that. We will always make hostfuls whenever we can. We don't take it lightly. So here, well, we take it lightly. We take ourselves lightly, but the job seriously? Does that make any sense? Well, anyway, here it is, Nerdist Podcast number 183, Hostful Goodness.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Matt and Jonah doing a Hostful Podcast.
Okay, I mean, we didn't talk about a new theme song, but I like it.
Oh, no, that's the unofficial. That's my fan fiction theme song. I write my own fan fiction for the podcast.
I don't know if that's a fan fiction theme song. No, you can call it a parody.
I'm a fan of my own work, and I write fan fiction based on my work.
But it's not fiction.
Things that I would prefer that I write about, but don't officially.
Just what you just did, there was no fiction involved. You actually were just saying what happens every time.
And I have dragon wings.
There it is. But that's that the wasn't fiction element.
You could put it on YouTube, call it a parody, because if you search the word parody on YouTube and see what comes up, nothing that comes up is actually a parody of anything.
Actually,
you
know, parity, P-A-R-I-T-Y.
U-N-I-T-Y. Ooh.
That's a unity. Yeah. another thing is like you find on YouTube, anyone who uploads something will just put fat kid in it. For assholes like that, like me, who wants to see fat kids falling, and there's so many videos you see where you're just like, that kid's not that fat at all.
I watched a fat kid falling montage and was bummed that I was not in it.
Well, you don't necessarily fall; it's more of a run
over. That's where I love where your ego struggles. You're like, well, why'd that guy call me fat? How come I'm not in the fat guy montage? Yeah.
Well, it's a valid question.
Pick aside.
One of the best YouTube videos, and like recently, and this is what I like about how there's the YouTube app on Xbox 360 now, is that you
can
just
though.
Do that. You could just sit at a party and just everyone looks up YouTube videos. And I was over at Kumail and Emily's, and we're all just drunk and stoned. And we just watched this one where it's one we showed on Web Soup once, where it's the kid that tries to go off the back of a pickup truck. And then, like, quickly before his face hits the ground, says, oh, God damn it.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And just starts squealing, but yeah. Then they slow it down.
Yeah. Oh, God damn it.
And then when his voice pitches, like, oh, yeah.
So fucking horrible.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so horrible. Listen, Web Soup was fun to do, but I do not miss watching people fucking land on their face.
Yeah. Well, that's what ATN on Attack of the Show is for. Come on by, everybody.
I'm not on that show either anymore.
Well, I am, and that's the point.
We had our season finale of Talking Dead, season finale of Walking Dead, which was so much fucking fun.
Dude.
No spoilers, but there was some fucking great, not only resolutions to this season, but setups for the next season.
Oh, yeah. Good setups. And, like, you know, to everyone who complained about certain elements of maybe lack of zombies, there was quite a few. And the thing, it's like, if that could have easily had been a little bit longer, and it would have been a great zombie movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I am excited that, I can't talk about what I'm excited about because if you haven't seen.
Well, just be secure with your feelings.
I am secure with my feelings that I'm excited about season three of Walking Dead.
Let's just say there are two separate shots in the season finale that
will fucking shit your pants.
Yeah, where it's like D and I high five.
Oh!
Yeah, D and I literally high fived when. Someone, yeah, like the first shot.
Zombie.
The first shot that I thought about.
Yes.
Like we just go, oh, and like both of us just fucking high five each other. And you it was fucking great. And then the second shot was
neat. Here's just jumping topics really quickly. Here I have to make a correction to a previous Hostful podcast.
Oh my God.
In which we played. Remember the nice story about Lamont Dozier, the guy who wrote all the Motown hits?
Oh, no.
Was it not Lamont Dozier?
It was not Lamont Dozier. It was a con man. Yes, it was a con man. I got conned by a Lamont Dozier impersonator. It was in the comment threads.
And then he told you all those lies about Foxconn. What a dick.
No, that was a different.
No, that's a podcast.
No,
right?
That was a different podcast.
Oh.
No.
Guy.
That was a different guy altogether. Yeah, the guy who pretended to be Lamont Dozier did not go to China and report falsely about a bunch of stuff at Foxconn. He just. Because who would pretend to be Lamont Dozier? It's the perfect crime.
It did sound weird, though. It did sound weird that a guy would just come up and say that.
I know. We told I would have just given him $1,000 right there.
You should have.
Well,
and I, you know, in retrospect, he had a buddy that walked up afterwards, and I was like, I can't believe, you know, this guy's a legend. And his buddy was like, Yeah, all right.
Yeah.
Like, and in retrospect,
though, it's like, he's just friends with him. That's why he's so relaxed.
Yeah.
About the situation.
Now he's so relaxed because the guy's full of shit.
Yeah.
In the comment threads of
that
Hostful.
Maybe drop that coffee mug and then you realize these guys were so sick.
Oh my God!
Just slow motion. The guy's walking away, singing doo-wop.
The usual Motown suspects. Someone in the comment thread of that Hostful wrote something like, Rut-row, and then the link to... It was in the fucking... It was a news story in Oakland,
and it
had the guy's picture. It was like, he's pretending to be Lamont Dozier. Because there's
crazy.
Not two people pretending to be Lamont Dozier.
What do you do with that podcast now? Do we just leave it there?
Yeah, we just leave it. It's a nice
little... Can we rename it? Chris Got Fooled?
Chris Got Fooled.
Yeah, of course.
F-O-O, apostrophe
D. F-O-O, apostrophe D. Yeah, Chris, I did. Because he was good. He was good at conning. Yeah.
Well,
I almost, some similar thing happened to me at South by Southwest on Saturday where some guy in a green shirt said, I'm fucking Bruce Springsteen. And then some guy really like,
did you put him on the podcast?
Bruce Springsteen's over here.
I'm Bruce Springsteen in the Street Band. No, it's E.
Also, you want to if you want to know what the perfect storm of awful is, it's 6th Street in Red River,
St. Patrick's Day
on during South by Southwest, St. Patrick's Day, and March Madness.
I think they call that a douche pop-up shop.
I was like, why is it different? Why does everything feel more horrible and dirty and more people are throwing up and the sun's still out? And I realized
right
it was
there.
Everything. So I just stayed in Esther's Follies the entire time.
Did your shows go well?
My shows weren't really well. It was a lot of fun. I got to do the Benson Interruption, did some stand-up. I got to do the Fund Your Die showcase. I did Who Charted. I was a guest on Who Charted, where I got to beat up some pinatas full of Doritos jacked chips.
Oh, that sounds amazing. The chips.
And I got to see some really good bands. I got to see Turf War finally, a band from Atlanta who fucking killed it. And Fiddlar, which is a band I was telling you about before. They have that song Wake, Bake, Skate. It's a fucking great song. Turns out I know the singer. I grew up with him in Hawaii.
Holy shit.
Had no idea.
How many of you guys even get out of there?
Not that many. That's what's weird
I didn't realize. I feel like it's a lot now.
Nah, well, me, him, and Tia Carrera.
That's three people.
Even Dog, the bounty hunter, stays on the island.
That's true. Exactly.
Doesn't like black people, but he stays on the island.
Hurley stayed on the island.
You know, he was very nice. Oh, no. They weren't. They were Samoan.
Yeah. That's the difference.
Yeah.
And then also, I saw.
I love his heavy-handed. By the way, I'm sorry before you. I love his heavy. I saw 10 minutes of Dog the Bounty Hunter the other night, which I never really watched
only
before.
10?
Yeah, only 10. And it was just really funny how like it's just those shots where I stand around going, "Yeah, we really changed some lives today."
Oh, like are you talking about when he's like when they're taking the guys like, "Bro, you got to believe in Jesus."
Yeah.
What if the guys
don't break a paw patting yourself on the back there, Dog?
Yeah exactly. Yeah, he's pretty horrible.
Is he?
Well, his hair is great.
Yeah, if anything.
We can all agree on that.
It is great.
Yeah, but then I also got to see a band that I grew up listening to, which is called Braid. They broke up for a while, got back together. I got to go and see them. And I got to see the Static Jacks. And Static Jacks, I've mentioned before, singer looks like Conan O'Brien, sounds like Danzig. So it was pretty cool
Finally!
To see. Yes, I know. We've all been waiting.
Finally, so many people are like, that guy sounds like Danzig, but he does not look like...
That thing no one asked for finally happened.
Yeah,
like, I finally stopped by Halloween Club coming back from WonderCon. Halloween Club is that huge year-round Halloween superstore that's right off the 5 near the Citadel.
Yeah.
And I drive by, every time I'm going south to, like, Disneyland or whatever, I see it. I'm like, Halloween Club, someday... Well, traffic was so bad on the 5 coming back from WonderCon that I was on that Telegraph Road or whatever that feeder road
is. Gotta take the 60, man.
And I'm like... Oh my God, Halloween Club. So I went in, and first of all, there were a couple like slutty little girl outfits but the models on the package for the costumes were actually little girls, like Naughty Wizard. I'm like, oh, please, why?
I also saw Naughty Wizard. They're really good.
Did it feel as awful as looking at that package made me feel?
Yeah, probably.
But they had the
weirdest...
You were
checking out their packages?
No.
That's gross.
Yeah. Okay, technically I was. Yeah, you got me there. I would be convicted. But they had the weirdest mashup, which was... a mask called Pumpkin President, and it was Obama's face in a pumpkin.
I don't know if it is, but I'm just going to say that's racist.
Really?
I don't know why. It just makes me want to.
It feels racist.
Yeah, it does.
Just putting an African-American in the shape of a pumpkin feels racist somehow.
I don't know why.
It just doesn't feel right.
You can say black guy.
Okay. But calling the president a black guy feels like disrespectful for some reason.
Well, I'd call the president a white guy if he was white.
Yeah, but...
Yeah, you call him like a rich white guy.
But you wouldn't be like, this black guy president we got. You'd be like, our African-American president. It's just more respectful to say...
I would just say this president.
This president.
I call him Hawaiian president.
I mean, that's just me.
And you would say
I'm not going to say... I'm going to say I did agree with a lot of things he talked about, but the reason I voted for him mostly was because he was from Hawaii.
Nice.
Yeah, now I know what people felt about like George W. Bush. They're like, I know where he's from. I'll vote for him.
And you vote for him because he's from Hawaii.
Yeah, I know where he grew up.
I voted for him because Sarah Palin was not his running mate.
It's true. She was not his running mate.
Yeah. Game change.
Game change. Pete Holmes and I have this running joke because he talks about like how the podcast is totally, he's like, it's a game changer. People are showing up to my show. It's a game changer. And so he would send me emails where just like game changer was every other word. So now whenever I see any iteration of game change, I take a picture of it and text it to him. So the game change poster he got for me, I'm like, Pete, I'm never going to stop doing this. Game change.
Game change.
Game change.
Yeah, I met a lot of people who were fans of the podcast in Austin. So thanks to them.
Thanks, guys, for listening
and for coming out to see us when we were just there. Here's a fun bit of technology business that I just want to cover. A lot of you who have iPhones probably noticed up in the corner that it now says 4G.
Oh, it's the HSPA. That's not.
It's not 4G as in the LTE network. Right. It is the fourth generation of their network.
Yeah.
And so technically they're not wrong, but they also know probably that people are going to mistake that for being the LTE network. So it's a little crafty on their parts.
You better not mistake it for the LTE network. It's so much slower.
It's like as soon as I saw 4G bubble there, I was like, oh, interesting. So I ran speedtest.net and it's not.
No, it's the same. Yeah.
Same exact network. It's just their iteration of the network.
It's that thing they charge us a little bit extra for.
People that like the number and the letter G have become very loose now, but it basically means like the generation of the network. So it's not those super blazing fast LTE network that you might think. So it technically you're not wrong for what you're doing, ATT, but you know what you're doing.
Yeah, that's exactly why I bought the Verizon iPad instead of the AT&T.
I believe I did buy the Verizon iPad as well. For the
they get enough of my money. They have my cable and my fucking cell phone.
So
it's like I'm giving them like $200 a month.
Who, Verizon?
No, AT&T.
Oh, wow. Spread some of your wealth around, Matt Myra.
I'm giving it to Verizon now. Giving them some of my monies.
You're good for you.
Thanks. Speaking of monies, I bought a Jaws poster this weekend at WonderCon, an original 1975 Jaws poster.
Wow.
Oh.
How much?
$400.
That's not bad.
It wasn't
framed?
Bad. No, it's being framed right now. Jerry Duggan, who works on Attack, asked me how I was getting it framed, and I showed him the thing, and he saw that it was being dry mounted, and he made me call them immediately and tell them not to dry mount it. Because I didn't realize dry mounting is gluing it to a backboard.
Yeah. Oh, I thought that was when you fuck someone through your pants.
That's dry humping.
Oh.
That's dry humping.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, you shouldn't let someone dry fuck your poster.
Yeah, yeah.
Why?
Because that's a waste.
I mean, they could fuck my poster. That's fine.
That is a waste.
Just don't glue it.
Just cut
backboard.
A hole in the shark's mouth.
Anyway.
I bought an original Ralph Bakshi cell from the movie Wizards.
Oh, wow.
And Ralph Bakshi was there and fucking signed it. It was amazing. It was like $200 for an original cell from Wizards.
You know there are literally hundreds of thousands of them.
There aren't, though. Like, cells get destroyed easily.
Listen.
Yeah.
You can get Ghostbuster cells for $10.
What, the original? Like the original
cartoon.
Like, yeah.
They made 150 episodes of. Yeah.
The one that was called The Real Ghostbusters.
Yeah, not The Ghostbusters.
Where Egon had like a blonde mohawk.
Yeah, and was voiced
it was
by
like a
Maurice.
Oh
my God! I didn't even think to ask Maurice LaMarche about that.
I completely forgot about that, too. I would have had him sign my cell. Anyway, it's not important.
It's not important.
Yeah.
But WonderCon was amazing. I finally announced our channel lineup, which I want to go through a little bit right now, just because we made a
clear up some misconceptions
press conference video for it, which is on the channel right now.
It's YouTube, on an actual television channel.
YouTube.com/Nerdist. I'm so excited about this channel. I have no idea if anyone's going to watch it, but it's really fun to make a bunch of stuff that I give a shit about. And so we're going to do, here's a bunch of shows we're doing. I'll announce on it here. I'm doing a show called All-Star Bowling, which is team competition bowling.
Yes.
So we did a team. The first one we did a team Nerdist. It's always team Nerdist with different people from. It'll rotate.
Yeah, that's the one I got.
So
drunk
you did the first one. It was you, Allison Hayslip, and Sex Nerd Sandra bowled against. We made a team of chefs. So it was Harley Morenstein from Epic Mealtime, Hannah Hart from My Drunk Kitchen, Michael Voltaggio, Jennifer Beam, and so we bowled against a team of chefs.
Harley's a chef, really? We're calling that a chef?
He does cook things.
He cooks on the internet.
What do you want?
All right.
And he's a fierce competitor. I bowled like shit that day.
Canadian. I bowled pretty badly, too.
I found
also,
it's hard to produce a show and bowl on it at the same time.
It was weird. Forgot that I had a...
That's a life lesson no one learned.
Don't produce a show and bowl on it.
I also forgot that I had an audition shortly after that, and so I had to go to the audition pretty drunk. But I'm going to say,
was the character
it.
For Drunk Guy?
What?
Drunk guy character?
Yeah, it was for a guy that was kind of supposed to be like
he's
a stoner.
He's really method.
And I don't do stoners.
I was really into this work, so I improvised the alcohol. So we have a bunch of other fun teams coming up. I think we're going to do a team Mad Men we're going to bowl against.
Nice.
So that'll be a show that we're doing. Comic Book Club Live. We're going to make a video version of our comic book podcast. Cute Things Exploding, which is very self-explanatory. Face to Face with Weird Al Yankovic is a hard-hitting Weird Al Yankovic celebrity interview news show. So that's
essentially all the best parts of LTV.
Yep, we're gonna do we're gonna do Ain't It Cool News. The Henson has built a Harry Knowles puppet who will be conducting a lot of the interview. This looks fucking amazing.
That's awesome.
So we're going to do Ain't It Cool News as a show. We're getting a bunch of classic Kids in the Hall sketches, and I shot like DVD extras with it, but it's not a DVD. I just don't know what else to call them. They're basically at you. So you watch a Kids in the Hall sketch that you loved, and right after it, because I wanted people to get to their content as quickly as possible, right after it, it's me sitting down with the kids talking to them about the sketch the people just saw.
Did you do one for the sausages short?
Oh, I can't remember.
What about the beard? What about the beard?
Let me finish talking about the sketch I thought of. The sausages. It was like the Eraserhead, Bruce McCullough one, where there's like the lady working at the sausage factory, and then there was Scott Thompson who was like, I want more sausages.
I don't know if we did that one.
What about the beard where Kevin McDonald goes on vacation and decides to grow a beard and then it makes him kill people?
I think we might have done Ascertain.
Okay.
Ascertain.
But we did, I mean, we've got like 60 Kids in the Hall clips. Yeah. And so we did, we did wraparounds for all those, which was super fun for me as a fan asking guys about like Scora the Gentle Shark.
Wow, you should get one of them on the podcast.
Scora!
I should get one of them on the podcast. We're going to be, we have another show called Weird Shit from Japan, which is Weird Shit from Japan. Henson is giving us, they had an ape detective show called Suds, which we're putting out there. And then we're condensing classic episodes of Farscape into minisodes as well. The Awkward Family Show from Awkward Family Videos, from Awkward Family Photos. We're going to do a video show. Alex Albrecht is doing a show called 4 Points that Allison Hayslip is going to be on. Another show called Gift Gift City. We have the Gumball 3000 race with the Dudesons.
Those are from Norway?
Finland. They're from Finland.
Finland.
Yeah.
They're from Finnan.
They're from Finnan.
Yeah, yeah.
They're Finn Natalia. They're from Finland.
Yeah, they do weird shit. Yeah,
fucking crazy shit.
Yeah. That's
exactly why I'm not going with them.
We were going to stick him with them and put them in, like, make him a reporter in the car.
That would have been awesome.
I know.
I have a job.
That could have been a job.
No.
We're doing a show called Hero Complex with Jeff Boucher. Jeff Boucher from the LA Times. Interviews the most insane. Like, he's a guy that'll just get Jim Cameron to come sit down with him and talk about stuff, or like, you know, or I don't know, who,
Ernest Blofeld,
or Jim Varney,
the ghost of Jim Varney.
So do a search gift. We're doing a cosplay show called Just Cause that Matt's on, and Chloe Dykstra, Justin Willman's Magic Meltdown is a street magic show. Neil Patrick Harris is doing a show with puppets, where he every night he falls asleep and he dreams in puppets.
That's awesome.
So it was just sort of a fun way to do like a sketch, like a puppet sketch comedy show with Neil. Ralph Sorella from Howard Stern's network is going to do it, you know, like a version of Geek Time on the channel. Nerd Turns, where all of our interns are actually doing their kind of Larry Sanders show at Meltdown. This one I'm very excited about. Star Talk with Neil deGrasse Tyson. Fucking sweet. I'm so excited about that. Fucking Star Talk!
I know.
We got Star Talk!
You got it. I didn't do anything.
Yeah, you're right. How dare you try to glom on in my thoughts.
I mean, I just showed you the podcast and introduced it to you.
You did not introduce me to Star Talk.
I did, too.
No, you really
did. Yes,
didn't.
I did.
I knew who Neil deGrasse Tyson was.
I remember the day where you were like, what's the name of that podcast you told me to listen to? And I said, Star Talk. You're like, okay. And then you downloaded it. Mm. So you're welcome. You might have known who Neil deGrasse Tyson was, but you did not listen to the podcast.
I'll give you 10% credit.
Ladies.
What? Is there a sale at Bergdorf's?
Bergdorf?
Yeah, it's New York. Bergdorf Goodman's.
Oh, I never heard of
it. You never said?
No.
Did you see Arthur?
No, I've never seen Arthur.
You have to see the original Arthur.
Okay.
John Gielgud is sublime. All right, we're doing Tournament of Nerds.
Great show.
With Justin Donaldson, who's hosting.
And Hal Rudnick.
It's where they have like people take, it's a debate show where people take sides in pop culture. So it'll be like Cliff Huxtable debating, you know,
The Kool-Aid Man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they debate why they're awesome and why the other one sucks. And yeah, it's so much fucking fun. You've judged a ton of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Rob Zombie's going to do a show. We're getting some episodes of Nana and Little Puss Puss, which was a great animated show that I remember watching in the Spike and Mike festival. And that's the main chunk of the lineup right there. We're going to be, all the shows aren't launching at once because it's just, that'd be too many things to launch on the same day. So we'll launch a handful of shows on April 2nd and then slowly throughout the year roll out more. And then, of course, we're going to live stream Course of the Force, which is our big. Oh, and we're going to do the Indoor Kids as well.
Oh, nice.
As a podcast.
Oh, isn't Maddie producing that? Maddie Kirsch?
Yeah, Matt Kirsch is producing that. So it's Kumail and Emily and Steve Agee. And it's sort of like them sort of fucking around through games that they're playing.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, yeah. Maddie Kirsch, for our listeners, he was the executive producer for Jonah's Arcade.
Yes.
And he's working with also with Jason Bateman and Will Arnett on a like a machinima show. So yeah. he's really good.
Yeah, Matt's really great. And so, you know, and we're really I really tried to program everything that I would want to see on a channel, and pretty much all of it worked out that I was trying to get.
Yeah.
What didn't work out?
I don't think is there anything that didn't work out? I'll answer that question honestly if I can think of something. I can't remember.
Tits and butts.
There were a couple.
Oh, man,
there were a couple shows that we were going to try to do, but technologically, we just weren't sure we were going to be
able to. The show.
That show about warp speed.
Yeah, warp speed. Traveling fast.
Not real.
That show called Traveling Faster Than Light. We weren't figuring out we were going to be able to do. Teleportation was a show we weren't able to get off the ground.
Platonic male and female friends.
Impossible. Yeah, you can't even. Impossible. I mean, it just doesn't even. One person always wants to fuck
the
other. So it's just like to find a perfectly balanced. Parity. Really?
Yeah.
It was impossible. So yeah, Nerdist channel on YouTube is launching April 2nd, and it part of the success of the channel is going to hinge on, you know, our subscriber base. And so please go to youtube.com/nerdist and click subscribe. That would be very, very helpful to us to if you support that. And you know, we also have other shows that we're working on that we haven't announced yet. And one of them could be fucking crazy. So, so we'll see. But anyway, super, super excited.
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, the series.
The series, yeah. Yeah, finally, right? You've been waiting all these years.
I haven't.
To see. But it's all his.
It's basically, it's just the it's Indian guy, and it's like the Incredible Hulk TV show where he just travels around helping people.
I'm in.
Suffocating friends.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Sure.
I'm in. He suffocates and you hear, na na na.
Yeah, and then that's when he.
Na na na.
Let's pick up that large engine with the pillowcase.
Yep, that's what we got it. And then, so that's the whole thing.
Cool.
Yeah. No, we're not actually doing that show.
No, I know. Yeah.
But that would be really good.
That would be good.
If we
do. I'll do it.
You want to do it?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I'll be in red face.
You got to show. It's not okay to be in red face.
It's not?
No.
Wow.
Oh.
Any kind of face.
I thought just the black was the one that was.
No, no, black.
Just the black.
Black and red is not okay.
Fine, then I'll do another thing.
Yellow
face.
Any color face.
No, any color face?
Yeah.
Well, I guess I'm out of luck then.
Yeah.
That's all I trained.
Technically, even dressing up as a Simpsons character is offensive.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
It's not okay. So. That's it. That's our lineup, and I hope you guys like it. I'm I don't know. I'm so nervous about it. Not nervous, but just, you know, like you make stuff and you work on it for so long, you just kind of go, I hope this is what
it'll be great.
I mean, it's all the things that I would want to see. I mean, fucking Weird Al and Neil deGrasse Tyson and Neil Harris and
the Neils. Pitch that.
Oh my God, that's a great idea.
Yeah,
we just need like Neil Armstrong. And Neil Finn.
Oh, let's do it.
Living in a house.
Yeah, all you need is
the Neil world.
I'd watch that.
The Neil world.
Yeah, yeah.
Neil Gaiman is real. In there.
Neil Gaiman's in there. Ryan O'Neill.
Neil Peart plays drums, obviously.
Yep. Yep. Neil just has to be in there somewhere. Any kind of Neil name has to be in there somewhere.
Directed by Neil Mahoney.
People who genuflect all the time.
Okay.
Very exciting. YouTube.com/Nerdist. What are you up to this week, Myra?
This week, I don't know. What am I doing?
Are you reviewing?
We're going to Philly and then Atlanta.
Oh, yeah, we're going to Philly and Atlanta Friday and Saturday.
Philly, Atlanta, then Vegas for me.
What's in Vegas?
Vacation.
Vegas vacation?
Vegas vacation.
Why is that a vacation?
My buddy John and his wife Shannon, they're coming out to California for the week. It's the week I took off because Attack of the Show is dark.
Oh.
So they're going to Vegas first and then driving on Monday. I told them I would go with them.
You and Greta?
No, Greta is going to be here because her sister is here. We will all gather again on Monday. We'll be reunited in California because Monday night I have Star Trek.
Ah, yes, of course. At Meltdown.
I don't know who's going to be doing that with me.
You know who might be doing that with you?
Who's that?
Our buddy Moshe Kasher has dropped
by. He probably
by.
Isn't. He probably couldn't move his Johnson.
Hey, Moshe.
Hi, guys.
Where did you come from?
Does that hurt?
It's like in Skyrim where they go, did you hear a wizard just appeared out of thin air?
He is Dragonbane. I want to say that not to shatter the elusive myth of the fourth wall in this podcast, but I've been sitting here listening to you announcing your YouTube channel. It sounds really fucking cool. I would watch all of
it. Oh my God, thank you so much. I appreciate that. I really do sincerely appreciate that.
There's one subscriber.
That's real talk.
And I was thinking with the Neils, you could have all three Neils on bended knee and say the Neils beg you to watch.
That's a great idea.
There's the bench ads.
You saw my turn on Mad Men, right? When I was doing podcast stuff and YouTube channel.
Exactly.
Mad Men of the future.
Yeah.
Nice to be here,
Moshe. It's nice to. It's very nice to have you drop by because you have a book that people should read.
I do.
And let's just get that right out. Let's just throw that right out on the table.
Cool. It's called The Secret. And
You didn't write that.
Oh, sir, but that was on your vision board to be able to write The Secret. Right. It'll never materialize.
Right. When I read The Secret, what I got out of it was I wanted to manifest having written The Secret. So it was kind of a
You can write The Secret too, T-O-O.
That's true.
Yeah.
Also The Secret.
Yeah. More secrets.
Yeah.
I do have a book coming out at the end of the month. I'm super excited about it. It's my childhood memoir about my ridiculous childhood. It's called Casher in the Rye, which sounds similar to another book.
I don't.
The Secret. It sounds similar.
Right. Yes.
It
does.
The Stand.
The Stand. Just to give you guys an idea of what the book's about, the subtitle is The True Tale of a White Boy from Oakland Who Became a Drug Addict, Criminal, Mental Patient, and Then Turned 16. So it's a debaucherous tale of childhood drug addiction and insanity.
Those are competing with some Barrymore stats. There.
Yeah.
It's funny. Deanna, my girlfriend, who you also know, she this morning I was telling her, like, oh, yeah, we're doing a rap motion on the podcast, and he has his book. She's like, yeah, I'm really excited for it. I really wish I was one of those kids that got all my drinking and drugs out of the way before high school ended.
Yeah, that's funny. I now that I'm getting older, I always was super proud of it, like sort of like a straight edge kid my whole life. And now that I'm getting older, it's becoming weirder and weirder as I get older to say, I haven't gotten high or drunk since I was 15.
Yeah, when you hear that, like the
Jesus
one,
Christ,
one of the three degree. Meetings that I went to, like one of the three AA meetings I went to, the kid who was running the meeting was like 19 or 20. And he had already been sober for like 3 years. So when you hear that, like someone has really fucking had a rough go.
Yeah, I mean, that's what the book's about, is about my kind of ridiculous journey through. Like I said, my third rehab was at 15. I was a grizzled old vet at 15 coming out of my third rehab. Mm. But I flunked ninth grade. Three times. Yeah, man.
Yeah, there you go.
Jonah and I were, there's a report card. There's an image of the report card in the book. And my GPA for my eighth grade semester was 0.17.
Oh, wow.
So I had an F, 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 D minus F. And you know what the D minus was in?
What?
Special ed.
There you go.
do you know it was... You would blow a higher blood alcohol content than your grade point
currently. Yeah.
So are you totally, do you not do anything anymore? Do you still, do you drink or anything anymore or no?
I watch a lot of Star Trek, which is I think what brings me to the possible Star Trek hosting. I don't do anything, I still don't do anything,
It's hard, it's a very difficult lifestyle to maintain.
Especially in the world that we live in, right? In this, the comedy community can be very weird. Yeah. People like Jonah pushing drugs on you and stuff.
I just want everyone else to come to my level.
Yeah.
You know?
Let's get high and watch kids fall on their faces.
Yeah.
Well, I first met Jonah like right outside of my school playground. He was standing on the corner lurking. He had a hood on and stuff. And he was like, this one's free, kid. And that's how we kind of connected.
Well, I just knew, and I went back in time to do this. So this is really, it was a lot of work on my part. But I just knew that one day this would make a great book.
Yeah, I just got you were helping him out.
This skinny hip hop kid. In
Maybe
Oakland.
Jonah's not so crazy after all.
Ancient Chinese secret, huh?
Well, you're not.
Why can't I?
Because you're not.
Yeah.
That's why you
all
can't.
These characters I have. If only I was Billy Crystal,
Sammy Davis Jr. or a 40s comedian.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, I mean, the book takes place in Oakland in the early 90s and stuff, and it's me and all this group of kind of ne'er-do-well kids. These kind of, you know, I actually believe, I hope this doesn't sound arrogant. I believe we invented white people acting black. I think that was our idea.
In
I'm
Oakland?
Not totally positive about it, but I really think my group of people were like the sort of progenitors before it spread into the suburbs and
sure.
became, you know, the real dominant
right.
zeitgeist paradigm.
You were the original Wiggins.
Yeah, we were. Yeah. I think we were. I mean, I really think we were. And that was really born out of necessity because in Oakland, we were all Oakland public school kids and it was all black kids. So the cool popular kids were like gangster black kids. And so that's what we aspired to be. And we all affected Southern accents as time went on. And I used to be a liberal N-word user, but in a really good kind of user-friendly way. And
you had been accepted by the group.
Well, when you're a white guy that says the N-word, you're given permission from certain sectors of your black friends to use the N-word. So if a new black person comes around, you wait for a while until you get like a
They give you a card, like a laminated card, that you can present?
Yeah. And it's got an emerald on it, and they touch your forehead.
Oh, and there's a whole thing to it, right? There's a whole ceremony.
Yeah, they say, "I now dub thee Sir Mix-a-Lot." You're on.
Yeah, exactly.
And, my parents are. I just want to give you guys who are listening some of the juicy details. My parents are both deaf. My mom.
But you were just talking about talking like a black kid. Explain to them which kind of deaf.
Yeah, hip hop deaf.
Oh, right, right. Deaf.
They were breakdancers, and in fact, my mom gave birth to me while doing a head spin.
You were conceived on a cardboard.
Exactly. I need hot water, towels, and cardboard.
Yeah, exactly. You came out just doing like the sweetest end position.
Oh, and a jam to kick it to.
A deaf comedy jam, if you will.
Yes.
You popped out, your first words were, "Bring that beat back."
Yeah, that's right. And then I went back into my mother.
We should name him Nitro Casher.
My mom essentially kidnapped us when we were little kids and moved us from New York to Oakland. And so then I was raised in this kind of weird, man-hating household.
Wait, both your parents were deaf?
Both my parents were deaf, yeah.
Like, fully?
Full-on deaf, hell yeah. Yeah, full on.
Were they near the same explosion, or were they born deaf?
They didn't become deaf together. Yeah. Oh, you mean they were already married?
Yeah. No, did they take a deaf pact?
Yeah. No, what happened was when I was a very young youth, I grabbed an ice pick and just stabbed into my parents. No, they were born deaf separately. They met at a deaf thing.
Sort
of deaf.
DEFCON?
Was it a DEFCON?
I know this is insulting. But they'll never hear
well
it.
Well played.
Thank you.
Well played, sir. That's right.
Great.
Yeah, my parents, you're right. They won't. My mom won't hear it. My dad won't because he's dead.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, all right.
So anyway, guys. Maybe he will hear
podcasts,
it now.
Podcasts are available on your iPod and Heaven.
Yeah. They are. Well, that's what Heaven is for a deaf person, is the ability to finally listen to
we
the Nerdist
it.
Podcast.
Yeah, yeah. It's like when Jordy finally gets his real eyes in Insurrection, and he looks at the sunset.
Just like that.
And then burns his eyes.
Right. Oh, man. Why didn't Jordy take the eyesight from Q? So stupid. Anyway, that's not the point.
Good point.
And then, my dad, also, when we left, my dad jumped into this, the Hasidic Jewish group called the Satmars, who are the most, of all the Hasidic groups, they're the weirdest. So that's like...
How so?
I mean, they sleep in separate beds. Wife and husband sleep in separate beds. They're the people that don't they go to Israel, but they don't acknowledge that it exists. It's like being, you know, when like Susan didn't believe she was really in Narnia, you know,
right.
It's like that.
Okay.
Except they're all Susan.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
And so
Rabbi Tumnus.
Yeah. Hello, it is me. And so I would go home and pretend to be a Hasidic Jew for 6 weeks a year, even though I didn't know what I was doing. I would just go sort of shuck and jive and be like, "Oh, do you like me, mammy?" And all of that kind of led to me plunging into like teenage drug addiction and little white boy gangs and graffiti and arrest and mental institutions. And by the time I found drugs, I was so twisted and ridiculous from all the circumstance of my childhood that I got into a lot of trouble very quickly. So that's some of the...
How do you communicate with your... Do you have brothers and sisters?
I do, yeah.
And so how do you communicate with your parents? Did you know...
I know sign language.
You know fluent sign language.
In fact, last night I was on an episode of Showtime Shameless,
yep.
Where I played a deaf, paraplegic, crackhead, ex-male prostitute dying on my deathbed with I had a tray cold and stuff, and I was signing in the episode.
And the daughter still fucks you.
No one fucks me. I asked Joan Cusack, asked me, "What can I do? I'm dying." She's like, "What can I do do you need anything? And I like, I essentially ask if I can go down on her. And she's like, oh, no. And then they buy me crack and they smoke crack out of my tracheotomy hole. With it's really fucked
Holy
up.
Holy shit.
And
twisted.
Yeah. It's really shameless, you guys.
Yeah.
So you used but a lot of sense memory to do that scene.
That's right. Yeah. But here's some trivia about that episode. I don't know if I should say this, but I was swearing like crazy swearing in sign language on this episode. Oh, it's showtime, so it doesn't matter. Damn it. But anyway,
yeah.
But if you're deaf, not that you'll be listening to this podcast, but you can see what I'm saying. I'm just saying the craziest shit in sign language that isn't in the script, but I'm just, they don't know
what
I'm saying. No one understands.
What were you saying?
Language but me. I was just like, this fucking crazy bitch, just like about Joan Cusack, get me the fuck out of here. Buy me some crack. I want to eat her pussy. Oh, I don't know if I can say that.
You can say that on the podcast.
Okay, good. But anyway, so that's some trivia for the listeners.
How do you sign, I want to eat Joan Cusack's
How
Let's
do you
see.
Think?
Okay.
Yeah.
V for victory.
Yeah, and Joan Cusack, of course, is. I don't know what Joan Cusack's sign would be.
That's pretty. You just hold up a picture?
Yeah, I guess so. That's right. You have to have a lot of pictures of celebrities when you're
dead. Did you?
Only the Cusacks have their own signs.
Right. Exactly.
Well, you know what? John's would be. Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. Hands above hands head, boombox.
Right, yeah. Boombox.
And all the deaf people will be like, what's a boombox?
I think.
It's this thing vibrations.
That's right.
You can make that joke. You have deaf parents.
Yeah, I can do it all.
Was it. I mean, I hate to. This is going to sound so obnoxious. Did comedy save you?
That did sound obnoxious.
It does.
No,
I know.
It's not obnoxious, but I understand what you're saying. I mean, in a weird way, what I describe in the book is that in a weird way, I don't know if it saved me, but it allowed it. I became a comedian because of the skill set that I learned from being a fucked up kid. So I was this
a liar.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I was this like lone white boy in the sea of black and Mexican kids in Oakland Public Schools. And so you have to figure out, like I said, what you want. You either want to become black or become invisible or become funny. You know what I mean? To defend yourself, making jokes. And that's for sure where I first learned how to start making jokes was in Oakland Public Schools.
They're actually, when you're filling out the demographic information right. at school, the checkbox says black, one says invisible, one says funny. Yeah. And you just have to pick one of those. I'm kind of invisible, but I'm a little funny.
Yeah. Mostly invisible.
I was kind of black, but a little funny. That was
not invisible.
I slowly became black. I was not invisible. I was a little chubby. So
Is that how you met Brent Weinbach? Because you guys were in Boom Time.
No, I didn't.
Brent's from L.A.
Yeah, Brent's from here. But that is where I met Chelsea Peretti.
Oh, okay.
Chelsea Peretti and I did go to junior high school together, and we were both black at one point.
You went to high school with Chelsea Peretti?
Junior high.
Oh.
Also, Emily Maya Mills is also from the same area and had very similar upbringing, right?
Right. Basically, in the Bay Area, everyone is black. That is the top social rung. You want to be black. And so, was it like that in Hawaii? Did everybody want to be Asian in some weird way?
Everyone wanted to be, like, local. Like, yeah. I remember a kid that moved to Hawaii because he was in the military, and, like, within a year, he was talking pigeon.
Yeah,
and
right.
And I remember thinking it was weird because I was like, no, I'm from here. That's why I talk pigeon.
Yeah, but you acclimate. I mean, I even do it. I find when I go to the South and I'm talking to people, right. I get a little bit of a drawl back.
Yeah, right. When you're talking to a friend from back home, right. You start slipping into the, you know.
I hate that. I hate that about myself. I know that I'm the type of person that if I lived in England for long enough, I would start affecting the accent. And I hate that.
It's just what you're surrounded by. That's why they say go submerse yourself in whatever country you want to learn the language of.
I think it's just like a deep-seated, you know, evolutionary. I need to fit into my surroundings. Right. You know,
my
to
Boston
be,
accent just it comes out when I, you know. When
we'll
I'm
see
there.
On May 4th.
Yeah,
we go
we'll
back
see
to
on
Boston.
May 4th. Everyone's going to be
your
wicked
life,
queer.
Yeah.
And you're going to be a fucking retard.
Yep. So, which is a choice, man.
It is, yeah.
But coming up, though, like, it's like, when did you...
Thank you for saying coming up, by the way, because I wouldn't have understood if you said growing up because of the blackness in me. So
that's it. On the ups.
Yeah, when I was coming up, yeah, go ahead.
When you coming up, what would you get into? What would you get into?
Oh, what I'm going to get into? What do you mean? What are you asking?
Like, it's like, when was the age when you started, like, when you started getting into graffiti, when you started getting into hip-hop?
When I was 12 years old... is when I so in seventh grade is when I sort of plunged out of the social hierarchy of junior high and plunged into the fuck ups in the back of the school. So that was when I exited society, found drugs, found acid, found booze, found speed, found
what is acid? I've never done acid. I don't know. What are hardcore drugs like to a 12-year-old?
Well, the funny thing about taking mind expanding drugs when you're 12 years old,
I mean, there must be many funny things.
Well, yeah, there are, but you don't really have much of a mind to expand upon.
That's what I'm curious
so
about.
But in another, so that's that's a very bad thing, and it did definitely turn me into a weird person. That it, you know, some of the foot, some of that still carries with me today. But on the other hand, it's pretty good because it's hard to have a really bad trip at 12. You don't really have a lot of neurosis.
There's not that many demons inside of 12.
You know, everything's kind of like a roller coaster.
Yeah, I mean, what are you going to think? Oh, what am I going to do when I grow up? You'd never thought about death before, so it's like there's no real, you know, twistedness to you. So
I mean, I hope you don't think that I'm taking this lightly, like hilarious, you know, this one. But it's just that, you know, like, I mean, you know, you're pretty upbeat about it, and so I don't really see why I, you know, like making it like please tell us.
No. Oh, I didn't mention this book is a comedy.
Right.
The book's a comic book. It's a comic.
Because this is how we deal with awful things.
That's right. I mean, somebody once said anything you laugh at, you'll never be ashamed of again.
That's a great quote.
I think it's real. You know, I didn't want to go through this book and write a book that was like this sort of, you know, wake up call to the horrors of teenage drug addiction. First of all, I'm not the guy to write that book. Second of all, that book's already been written by 1,000 times over. This book is just absolutely a reflection of the absurdity of growing up in this world. I mean, it's just every story was so fucking ridiculous and hilarious. And we used to, speaking of the Nerdist, we used to hang out in the gutter, in the sewers of Oakland, literally in the sewers.
With Master Splinter?
Yes, with Master Splinter. That's what I was going to say, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle style, a la the Nerdist, a la Meltdown Comics. But we literally, there was a place in Oakland where you could, you go into there's like a drainage ditch, and we would go down there with candles and hairspray and lighters and hairspray to torch any spiders or rats that we might see.
Sure.
Nice. And you walk about half a mile down this tunnel. It closes off into a tunnel, and there was like an antechamber where, Splinter was there, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Leftover
pizza. There were gnomes that were digging for great jam.
You probably thought you saw all those things.
Yeah. Yeah. Tim Curry.
Pennywise, I was just about to say.
Jack's dad from Lost. They were all there. And this
Ron Perlman, not in character, just Ron Perlman.
Just Tim Curry in there. Hello. And there was this guy named Frohawk who lived there. He was a man that lived in this sewer. He was a black gutter punk dude, literally a gutter punk. And we would go in there and we would get high in the tunnel. I mean, there's just so many ridiculous stories of things like that.
It's amazing that you turned out like, you seem okay.
Well, thank God. Literally, thank God. And that's why I'm glad to be on this podcast. I wanted to talk to you about the Lord.
Sure.
It's good, man. I got lucky, and some of my friends from back then didn't get lucky. Some of them went to prison. Some of them are dead. And I got to, you know, have this great life and write a book about it. So I'm certainly very grateful for it. And enough sincerity. No, but truly, it's a weird thing. When I was writing this book, I don't know if you ever had this experience of going into your own memory and being surprised by the things that you find there.
Well, we can, because they're just things that you don't think about in detail all the time. You kind of have these file markers in the back of your head where you sort of index things. But then when you start thinking about the details, you're like, oh, yeah, that's
right. You think about it. You think that they're gone, but they're not. They're there. And all you have to do is turn around and start to pay attention to them. Like the analogy that I use in the book, in the introduction of the book, when I'm describing going into this process of writing the memoir, is like, you know, Wesley in the forest of whatever, the swamps of sadness or whatever, Buttercup falls into the fire sands or the snow sand, lightning sands, and he cuts off a vine and jumps in, like looking for her. That's sort of how I felt the entire time I was writing this book, was like, I was in this quicksand kind of feeling around for things I couldn't quite find, and just... And then I had this one vine of my kind of adult brain that was made me feel like, okay, I'll make it back.
Or
out
if
of this
your Pensieve was a crack pipe.
That's right. Yeah.
And then you just pull the thoughts out of the.
Did you encounter any ROUSs?
In my
Rooms of Unusual Size?
In my memory or.
I don't think they exist.
Boom!
Hey, there we go.
That felt really good, Chris.
That felt really good. You told me something really insane backstage at a UCB show once, and if you want me to cut this out, I will, but it's one of the funniest things I've ever heard.
I'm sure I won't.
And you were just so matter of fact about it, where you go, yeah, when I'm on the road, if I meet a girl and it, you know, and she comes back to a hotel room and I feel like she's not going to have sex with me and she's going to leave.
Oh, no.
I just.
Oh, no.
Can I say it?
Yeah, you can do whatever you want.
Oh, I just ask her if she wants to watch me jerk off, and 100% of the time they stay and watch.
Jesus.
I mean, look. you know,
yeah, Chris, girls will do that. It's weird.
Chris
yeah.
makes up a lot of stuff. That's a thing. Chris is a liar, and that's why I was asked to come on here, was to expose you for the true liar.
I will cut that out if you don't want that in there.
Man, hey, you know. But the new book is...
do you want me to cut that out, Moshe?
No, I don't even know. Right. It feels good that you said it. It feels cathartic.
I'm just fascinated by that. Well, I'm fascinated by that as a concept.
I think it's an interesting concept because it really is about, you know, it's an experience for people that... I think the reason that they might stay is because they've never... Like, it's like, huh, that? Okay, yeah, that's
what
different.
It is. Yeah.
I would have so much... performance anxiety, like it wouldn't happen at home. I totally I can do this.
Oh well, Chris, I am actually a world championship semi-public masturbator.
Oh my god, semi-public.
Yeah. You and the guy
Coney
from Coney.
2012.
Invisible children.
Oh, speaking of Coney and internet videos, that things that are fake. There's a video going around on the internet right now that purports to be the footage of the Coney guy jerking off. And it's a like 5-year-old video of this guy jerking off in Russia where all these guys come out. Have you ever seen it? He's jumping on cars and he's like this crazy guy and they all beat the shit out of him. Have you ever seen
it? Oh, no.
It's clearly Russia. I mean, it's just like it could not be San Diego. Yeah, it couldn't be. And it says San Diego, Coney, and no one in the YouTube comments notices because they just want to viciously get this guy. But it's like, you know, long rectangular license plates.
Right.
And like, you know, like people, like bears walking by doing pictures and stuff.
All the words look like the word Kaopectate.
Stalin is there.
Literally, Stalin
is there.
Everyone's saying nuclear vessels.
Sean Connery submerges from underwater.
Nuclear vessels. Nuclear vessels would be a great name for a band.
Yeah.
Nuclear vessels. Would be great. So I just fascinated by that as a concept because it would never occur to me to do that. But I guess I can understand if you're a girl and you've never seen a guy do that, it would be fascinating.
I would do it if somebody offered it to me. If I was making out with someone and they said, I'm not going to have sex with you, but you can stay and watch me masturbate, I would be like, yes, I will.
Well, so how did those, asked how if they could as well?
With, I mean, look. This isn't a real story, so have I ever? I'm starting to get uncomfortable. No,
hey,
not really.
Listen. So this is the comedic version of the Basketball Diaries. Has anyone said that yet?
Yeah, I think that's actually a good comparison. I mean, yeah, the comedic version of the Basketball Diaries. It's sort of kissing cousins with Running with Scissors, Augustine Burroughs' memoir. And it includes a lot of women watching me jerk off on the road. That's the last.
How do those transactions
chapters.
End? Like, well, I'm done. Okay, well, I'll see you around.
Yeah, I give him a high five.
With the other hand.
No.
Before it hits the floor, the door's already open and you're showing them the way out.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, this has been great.
Thanks for coming. I know that sounded weird.
I guess you didn't, but I guess I did.
I hope you enjoyed my presentation of Invisible Children. I'll see you later.
It's a Russian guy, Jonah. It's not even him.
Yeah.
Well, that's what happens. Every time I have an orgasm, I scream out, nuclear vessels! That happens
Genesis
all the time.
Device!
Anyway.
So when does your book come out?
March 28th. It's coming out March 28th. And I'm going on a big book tour. On March 28th, I'm at the Barnes & Noble at the Grove. And at the 30th, I'm at Book Soup here in L.A. And then I leave... I'm going all around the country. I'll be in San Francisco, St. Louis.
You gonna hit
Chicago.
Booksmith in Brooklyn, Mass?
I'm not going to the East Coast yet.
No. You gotta hit Powell's up in Portland.
I'll be in Powell's in Portland. I'm doing a show at the Mission Theater in Portland.
Yeah,
are you
gonna be syncing these up with live stand-up?
Yeah,
dates?
So we're doing both a lot of stand-up and a lot of reading. So
perfect.
It'll be a really cool. All the shows will be cool. I'll be at the Moon Tower Festival in Austin and Chicago.
How much of the book
City.
Has found its way into your act?
I'm now reverse engineering the book into my next hour. I just also recorded an hour special.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
And so now I'm thinking, okay, I got to write a new hour. And so I'm thinking, I'm trying to reverse engineer this book into a sort of storytelling version of the book. And so I'm pretty excited about the stuff that I've been able to find in there. It's pretty.
Do you find
cool
did you find that when you were writing this book and you were talking about like going into the quicksand and pulling out all these little stories? Did you find that really helped you find a comedy voice that you, because you've always been a very funny guy, but do you feel like, well, now I'm a funny guy with a point of view and like something to actually say?
I mean, I've never wanted to have something to say. That's never really been my stand-up goal, is to figure out a way to declare things. I just feel like that's not for me. That's for somebody else. Sort of against my will, some of these stories are poignant and are a little bit more are a little less silly than some of the my original stand-up. And I think that's okay, too. I've always thought about stand-up like it happens to you. Like, you don't design it. It happens
yeah.
to you.
Yeah.
And speaking of Michelangelo, I've told this story before, but, like, there's a story of somebody coming up to Michelangelo and saying, you know, how do you make something like David? How did you make David? It's such a beautiful thing. And he goes, pizza. No, it's a really original. He goes, it's simple. I just got a brick. I got this big piece of marble and I chipped away everything that wasn't David. And so I sort of think that's what we do as comics is like we get on stage. We just chip away all the bullshit until we're left with a streamlined version of ourselves on stage.
He would say that a lot about like a lot of his sculptures was just like it was in there. I just let it out.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
And like so you can kind of say that's like it's in all of us. It's just letting out.
I got to go.
You have to. Oh, you have a 1 o'clock.
Oh, you have a.
I gotta go shoot B-roll of an iPad. Very offensive. Yeah. But I just while I was sitting here, I just ordered his book. So.
Oh, you ordered on the iPhone. Oh,
while you're listening, you should be ordering it too.
Yeah, please. Seriously. I'm getting it. Apparently, they're delivering it March 21st. So I don't know on Amazon.
You mean yesterday?
No, March 21st.
Wait, March.
Today's the 19th.
Oh, you mean 2 days from now?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was thinking about it. It takes so little to be a bestseller. That if half of the people listening to this right now were to purchase the book, I would be in a bestseller, and you would change my life. So seriously,
yeah, and we all personally vouch for Moshe as a comic and as a comedic force.
This will be a movie starring the next Michael Cera.
That's right.
Yeah.
Good luck with your B-roll on the iPad, Matt Myra.
I'll email you.
You're going to do Star Trek on Monday, right?
I think I am.
Okay.
I think I am.
You should do it. It's fun.
Yeah, you
should really do it.
I want to do it. We have John Singleton coming to our podcast.
Boys in the Hood, John Singleton?
In the Hood, John Singleton. I do
Hustle
a podcast.
Hustle and Flow, John Singleton?
Did he do Hustle and Flow?
He produced it.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
What was the horror one?
The horror one?
There was like a Street Tales.
Oh, Tales from the Hood.
Yeah. Tales from the Hood.
I love Tales from the Hood. I saw the same day I saw Casper, the Friendly Ghost movie.
Yeah, he's
a lot of crossover.
I'm excited. He's coming on I do a podcast called The Champs where we interview black celebrities.
It's you, DJ Doug Pound.
DJ Doug Pound, Neil Brennan. And every week it's a different black celebrity that we interview.
You just did Questlove.
We just had Questlove.
Oh my God. So great.
Let me tell you some crazy shit about what Questlove. Questlove is amazing and just an incredible interview and an incredible guy and a huge fan of our podcast, which was like so flattering.
Oh, that's awesome.
But anyway, he was talking about Jay-Z and about the upcoming Jay Electronica album.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know Jay Electronica? He's like the new like hyped guy in the hip hop world.
Okay.
And he said some things about the new album maybe not having a single, whatever. The point is, Jay-Z listened to the podcast, our podcast.
What?
And Jay-Z is very upset at the information that was up. Jay-Z is mad at our podcast, which I
think... That's so exciting!
I think that's like the most incredible thing I've ever heard in my life.
That's insane.
I don't want Jay-Z to be mad at me, but if he's going to be mad at me... I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah. Also, the fact that Jay-Z knows what a podcast is. I know he's a smart, very intuitive guy in the business and everything like that. But just like he knows the podcast,
when he knows your podcast. Yeah,
I don't even. It's like I can't even really quantify what that means.
There's very many steps to get there.
It's so ridiculous
that you occupy. No matter what size, you occupy a tiny bit of real estate in his
occupy
brain.
Jay-Z.
In his lightning sands. In his lightning sands, I am one grain.
Most yes, you're one grain of his lightning sands.
These lightning sand memories.
Like the guy's got a new kid. He's just like, I don't know, there's this fucking podcast with these guys.
That's the name of your next...
focus on being a parent.
That's the name of your next hour, by the way, Lightning Sands.
Yeah.
That's got to be the name of your next hour.
Into the fire swamps.
I always love seeing you at shows and hanging out. And it's like, honestly, anyone listening who's never seen Moshe perform comedy, you have got to see him do comedy.
Thank you.
And I really hope, I hope tons of people buy it. It's funny, like, it doesn't really take that many to get a bestseller. I'm like, yes, it does.
I mean, how many do you think it takes to make it a bestseller? I don't know.
It depends on how many like in the first week.
Oh,
and
is that right?
And it depends on, it's not only how many you sell, but how many you sell in comparison to
whatever else is selling.
Yeah, so if totally. Something else is out there that's, you know, then that's going to, you know,
well, yeah.
These are all just excuses for why I did not have a best-selling book. You might actually have a best-selling book because this, I mean, it sounds like, some of the stuff that you're dealing with really, really, really real stuff here in a way that hasn't really been, it hasn't been presented in before.
Yeah. Like I said, I wanted to present this agonizing story from a perspective of humor. And in a weird way, the humor is like a trap. That's what I've thought upon reading it. I didn't design it like this, but the humor is like a trap because you're laughing, you're laughing and laughing and laughing, and then all of a sudden the walls are closing in on you. By the end of the book, it ends in a very dark, well, I mean, it ends in a light place, but towards the third act of the book, if you will, you're in a very dark place and a very scary place, which is where I was at that age. It wasn't all funny stories of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. There was some really scary, horrible, embarrassing stuff. People that loved me, I hurt a great deal, and people that were around me got hurt and went to jail. And there's some terrible things that I was involved in, and I'm super grateful to have made it out of the other side, but also super grateful to be able to tell the story in a way that's meaningful. And in the end, it ends in a really beautiful way, I hope. And I think it's a really fun and important thing that I've made, I hope.
Well, there's two things. Number one, even though, like, I just dealt with alcoholism as an adult. And so, you know, when I wrote my book, I was like, you know, anxiety, alcoholism's like, there's so many books where people are like, oh, you really got to take this seriously. And right. I wanted to be like, yeah, we get it. It's fucking horrible.
Right.
But it doesn't have to be all doom and gloom.
Yeah.
And so I think in the reason that I'm trying to connect this to what you wrote is just the idea that, number one, presenting it in a way where you can kind of take ownership over it through comedy, it just, I don't know, I think it's more palatable that way. And like, we know how horrible the reality of the situation is.
Right.
But the fact that you can spin something out that would also be entertaining would also provide hope. Yeah. Like, hey, this guy was as bad off as you could possibly be and still managed to pull his life together, you know, be a funny, productive guy, put these stories together and write this book. I think the sort of the idea of that in and of itself is very important for people.
Yeah, I hope so too. Like, you know, I mean, I always say, like, it's almost like against my will, this book became sincere at certain points. Like, my real plan was to try to write this story, this dark, twisted story, in as humorous and absurd a way as I could. And against my will, it became a book where there are some very serious, I mean, it had to be. I realize that now. You know, when I was setting out on it, I was like, I'm just going to write this like funny story. It'll be all funny stories. But it wouldn't have done this story justice to ignore the kind of dark underbelly of it. And yeah, I really do believe, like, I remember when I was a kid, I stole a copy of The Basketball Diaries.
Mm-hmm.
And in fourth grade, I was reading this book. Like, it's very young to be reading a book like The Basketball Diaries.
Yeah.
And I just remember feeling this, like, connection to this character who was so damaged and destroyed. And because I was feeling damaged and destroyed at that age. And so my big hope when I was writing this was that this is going to be the kind of book that kids sneak under their beds and read late at night and, you know, with a flashlight and think, you know, this guy's like me, you know what I mean? And I'm not going to be like this forever.
Do you think, though, you were in fourth grade when you read that book?
Yeah.
And this is something that I've done throughout my life where I, shittily enough, like, kind of, I glorify a lot of those kind of people, like the drug addled, the drunks and stuff like that. Like, when I first saw Bat Santa, I thought, you know, the main character was so cool.
Right.
And he's pathetic.
Right. Totally.
He's pathetic in it. But just that detachment, I was like, man, that's just like, I just loved it. I loved that he didn't give a shit. And do you think that maybe reading that book early on kind of fed into this idea of someone you wanted to be, someone you wanted to be like? Like, you were on TV hosting shows, but you're like, and I'm just a guy that fucking hosts shows and I do comedy and I fucking drink and I'm just attached and hanging out all the time. Do you think there's something that feeds into that? Some little, like, you know, we all want to be Johnny Cash. We all want to be, you know,
there's definitely a romantic ideal because when you see like the famous party guy, all you ever see is the, like, the party aspect. And there, this plays with girls and everyone thinks they're great and you're talking about them and they're making the news.
And when he fucks up, it's funny.
Yeah, and you don't see the reality of it, which is, like, you fucking hate yourself and it's hard to get up in the morning and, you know, you're trying to figure out how to stop yourself from throwing up because you're so, like, you don't see all that. No one documents that part of it. The press doesn't document that part of it.
No.
They romanticize, like, the fun party idea of all that. And so I think you sort of get caught up in that. And it is funny. Like, I totally wore a badge of honor how fast and how much I could drink. I used to think that was an awesome thing.
Yeah.
And it's not.
It's not. And, like, do you think, like, it was pretty much romantic?
Yeah, I think that's a definitely a valid point and probably very real that when I was a kid reading about this stuff, it made me go like, ooh, yeah, maybe I can check out. Because like I said, I had all these circumstances that made me feel weird and different than everybody else. I was this white kid on welfare, Jews on welfare, extremely rare thing.
You might have been it.
Yeah, I might have been the only one. I say in the book, when they found out we were Jewish, they assigned us a special entrance to avoid being seen by other members of the Jewish community. But these deaf parents, and I was in special ed, and I was in therapy from the time I was 4 years old, literally. I had all these circumstances that made me feel so ugh. And so maybe reading that made me think, oh, shit, I could be something else. I could check out. And that is what drugs and alcohol did for me when I was a kid, was it made me, all of those things that spiked up and made me feel different were gone, and I was just high. And so it's like, there's nothing wrong, and this is my opinion, there's nothing wrong with drinking and doing drugs, but I think there is something wrong if drinking and doing drugs is the only thing that's ever made you feel like okay and stable in your life.
Yeah, yeah.
That's when you start to plunge in, because you need to continue to feel okay and stable, so you take more. And then your tolerance builds up and you take more. And then your circumstance behind you in the wake of you. I always talk about it like Katamari Damacy. Do you know that game?
Yeah.
Katamari
Damacy.
Like the analogy, like this little prince is going along in the early stages and he's picking up little stuff with this ball. And it's just little stuff at first and it's cute. But by the end of the game, he's picking up fucking mountains and buildings and dinosaurs and cars. And so that's sort of what it was like for me. When I first started taking drugs and drinking, I had this little ball of pain that I was pushing in front of me. And when I found drugs and drinking, I started to pick stuff up and it started to gain speed until by the time I was weirdly only 15 years old, this ball was like, 10 times my size and it was rolling behind me and I'm like running away from it with all of this stuff behind me. And I'm thinking, what do I do? And, what people said to do was, stop running. And I was like, but this fucking ball is going to, you see the size of this ball?
This will crush me.
Yeah, they're like, don't worry, stop running. And I was like, you sure? They're like, yeah, it's all good. So I stopped running and the ball just crushed me.
Yeah.
But of course, slowly, you pick yourself back up like Wile E. Coyote, blow some air back into
you. Blow through your thumb.
You blow through your thumb.
And then that's how you reinflate.
That's right.
It's hard. And the unfortunate misconception that you live by when you're super sucked in to the substances is that, it makes you feel better in the moment, but the reality is that it's not curing your problems.
Right. Yeah,
and they're just getting, like you said, they're getting worse. And you just don't, it just, reality sucks to deal with sometimes. And that's the kind of the thing that you have to come to terms with, is reality sucks sometimes. Kyle Dunnigan, who's a comic that I love, he would play this song on the piano every once in a while. He would play these like quick, silly songs. And one of them was about taking, antidepressants or something. And then it was like, cause why should I ever have to feel an uncomfortable emotion? And just the idea of that. And listen, antidepressants are right for some people, certainly not all the people that are on them, but definitely right for a percentage of people, but just not as freely as they are, we rush to drugs, we rush to substances to try to fix this. And it's like, you know what? Sometimes you fucking have to feel uncomfortable and shitty, but it'll go away.
Yeah,
and you just have to know that you're not going to feel that way forever.
Yes.
It will pass.
Well, just like anything, it's perspective. If you're able to just pull yourself out of the moment and just say, hey, listen, this sucks right now, but last week I was feeling pretty good and there was really no reason that I was feeling good, but I was. And right now there's no reason I'm feeling bad, but I am. But not everything's a constant and it's better that way.
I could read a passage that sort of speaks to this.
Do it.
Oh, please.
It's not a very funny passage.
No, that's fine. This would be a great way to kind of wrap up the show. So go ahead.
It directly sort of speaks
Moshe Kasher reads from The Kasher in the Rye.
This is from the third act of the book. This is not the funniest part of the book. So, let's see how this goes. Constantly worried, constantly scared. No one thought about me like I thought about me. The real problem was that the drugs I was taking were no longer taking that painful self-awareness away. My medicine was starting to fail me. My painkillers weren't killing the pain. Addiction is like that. When you first start taking drugs, the thing that gets you hooked is that it takes the pain away. It kills the ache. It makes the wound numb. Life was the wound. Life steered and stung. The world stung. I was born a mess of paper cuts. The world was a pool of lemon juice I'd been shot into. So I found drugs. I found a painkiller that made me able to ignore the wound. I could walk upright. I could go forward. I could navigate the acidic reality. Of course, if you're wounded and you find a medicine that makes you numb, you don't correct for the wound. I should have been limping. I should have been wincing, holding back, walking tenderly. But in the bag and the bottle, I found a way to walk upright, to fight and scrap and tumble and give life the finger. Not taking it easy, my wound ripped into me. It cut me deep. It rended itself open. The wound ached. Life got worse. So, of course, I took more of my medicine. I took more handfuls of that painkiller, straightened out, and walked upright again. Life raked into me. I had to shovel the painkiller into me. I got ripped nearly in two. There came a point where I was all wound. I couldn't see where I stopped and where the wound began. And of course, as happens to all addicts eventually, I hit the point where I couldn't take enough medicine to make my pain go away. So I couldn't make the pain be gone, but I needed to keep taking my dose of medicine. If this was how badly I was hurting now, just imagine how I'd feel with no medicine at all. The great irony of the addict is that the thing he takes, which is the only thing that has ever made life feel good, stops working long before he considers the possibility of life without it. That first day I'd gotten high, I'd promised myself a life where I'd never stop. I never wanted to not feel good I never wanted to not feel that way again. The fact that I hadn't felt that good in years hardly registered with me. Eventually, my wound ripped so deep I couldn't ignore it. I didn't know it then, but the door had closed on me. I was never going to find relief in drugs and booze. I was never going to find joy in a bag again. I was only going to feel slightly less misery. My only true friend had turned on me. One more best friend gone, this time without saying goodbye. What I didn't realize then was that what I needed more than anything was not something to kill the pain, but something new, something to heal the wound, something to fuse me back to whole, to the whole person I never was. I didn't need to feel good. I couldn't. I needed to heal. I needed to heal.
Holy
man,
shit.
That's amazing. You know, and the unfortunate thing, well, this is actually very fortunate for people who've never suffered addiction. They just don't, like, all of that will sound completely foreign to them. But anyone who's ever experienced it is like, yeah, that's what it fucking feels like.
Yeah.
But the idea of you fusing yourself back together into this whole being, that started from such an early age of your development. Like, how did you even know who your whole being was? Like, you had to completely almost be a whole start from scratch guy, right?
I think that's right. Yeah, I think that's true, that all of the lessons I learned post 15 years old were like new things that should have been common sense to other people, but lessons I had willfully ignored, you know?
And yeah.
So I think that my second chapter of my life was like becoming a different person.
How old are you now?
I'm 32.
32?
Yeah.
Well,
32.
Yeah, you like the ladies?
Yeah.
You fucking become a club DJ all of a sudden. Look, we make jokes about this stuff and we use humor to be able to present it to the world, I think, a lot so we can deal with it as well. But I really do. I think it's a very cool thing what you've done, like putting this into a book and sharing these stories and not being afraid to, you know, to talk about embarrassing things for the benefit of other people who might hopefully be like, oh, you know, maybe I'm not such a fuck up, or maybe I don't have to be such a fuck up anymore. So, congratulations on the book.
Yeah, that was great, man.
Oh, thank you.
It's
the rest of the book is funny, I promise. That was really an intense passage, but it spoke so directly to what we were talking about.
No, and I think it was important because we've been making, you know, like jokes about it the whole time. So, yeah. Like to see, I think the sincerity has to be there to root the comedy so that it doesn't just seem like, I'm making fun of this thing. Like people need to know. This is really coming from a real place, so you have to understand, you know, why it's being presented in this way.
Yeah, totally.
So, Casher in the Rye is available everywhere.
Yeah, it's available everywhere March 28th, Grand Central Publishing, Amazon.com. You can find me at MosheCasher.com. All my tour dates for the upcoming book tour are all on there. I'll probably be coming to a city.
Moshe is M-O-S-H-E.
Yeah.
Casher is K-A-S-H-E-R.
Yeah, taking the back end. I took the top. Nice, Jonah.
Yeah, so yeah, Moshe Casher, at Moshe Casher. Plug, 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 plug. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me on.
Of course. Thank you for dropping by.
And everybody listening should check out his stand-up. It is Moshe... and I've told you this before. It's like he's a guy that, like, when we're on the same show together or something like that, I do make it a point to watch you, if not anyone else. And also other comics, I think, are the same way, where you can do a 15-minute set of no material and still destroy a room, and that's what's always a delight about seeing you.
Well, thanks. I'm a big fan of both of your stand-up, too.
You didn't have to say that.
But I believe
it's true. Yes, he did,
Jonah.
True, yes, he did have to say it. That was the agreement we made before he came on the show.
Chris was holding up a sign, now us.
That's right. Yeah. But sincerely, I think you're both very funny.
You know, I have some rules on this podcast, Jonah. Number one, I always have to let people know that I'm funny. Number two, I always have to let people know I have famous friends. Now, I've been reading the internet a lot.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, this is the rules you started.
Oh, really? Somebody's been talking shit saying that stuff?
Constantly.
Did Willem Dafoe say he likes your stand-up?
He did not say that at all. Number three, I always say amazing a lot.
Yeah. I say yeah a lot.
Yeah.
The Hawaii thing.
Yeah,
everybody
go
to youtube.com/nerdist.
Please do that. all right. I'm very pleased to have ended the podcast in the circle jerkiest way possible, but congratulations on the book.
Thank you.
And at Moshe Kasher on Twitter.
Yes.
Okay.
Indeed.
People can follow you on there. Thanks a lot. Thanks for coming.
You.
Enjoy your burrito, everyone. Enjoy your burrito. Everybody. I can't reach the button. The stop button.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode of the Nerdist Podcast was brought to you by Hover.com. Hover's domain name registration and management that is simple. For 10% off your new domain, go to HOVER.com/Nerdist.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law & Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.